Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. America leads the world in COVID-19 infections, and the South appears to be the epicenter of those infections. Just yesterday, the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services reported 1,815 new cases and revealed hospitalizations have reached a new high of at least 1,179. Mecklenburg has more cases than any other county in the state, with our hospitals serving the most COVID-19 patients. As we witnessed earlier in this pandemic, outside of the patients suffering from the virus, it is frontline healthcare workers who are bearing the brunt of all this. Aside from much-needed equipment and protective gear being in short supply, they have faced dealing with a tsunami of highly contagious, incredibly ill patients who have strained hospital systems to the breaking point. Many of the doctors and nurses and others helping patients through this have never experienced anything like this before. Dealing with that is both a physical and mental health challenge, compounded by that nagging thought in the backs of their minds that even as they act as good Samaritans, they are putting their own health at risk. What toll is this taking now, and how might that toll manifest itself in the months and years to come? To talk about that, we are joined by several of those healthcare workers. Dr. Alexis Smith is a critical care physician and pulmonologist who works in intensive care units at Novant Health Hospitals in Charlotte and who deals regularly with critically ill patients, including those with the virus. And she just got off her, I guess, all-night-long shift. Thank you for staying up and being on the program, Dr. Smith. Welcome.
Good morning. I'm honored. Thank you.
Dr. Edward Kim is chair of the Solid Tumor Program and Clinical Trials at Levine Cancer Institute Atrium Health. He has treated cancer patients who have also contracted COVID-19. They are a unique population that is twice as likely, I'm told, to contract the virus. And when they do, they face even more serious complications. Thank you for being with us, Doctor.
Mike, it's a pleasure. Thank you very much.
And Mary Gail Frawley O'Day is with us. She is a licensed psychologist, trauma specialist, and executive director of the nonprofit Presbyterian Psychological Services, which is offering free therapy for health workers. Thank you for joining us as well this morning. Welcome.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
By the way, the Presbyterian Psychological Services, which I mentioned is offering free therapy, they're among several providers providing that therapy for this region's healthcare workers. We have a complete list for those who need it on our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talk. So let me start with the two medical doctors just to get a picture of where we are in this pandemic with regard to hospitals and their capacity here in Charlotte-Mecklenburg. Mecklenburg, as I said, has the most hospitalizations in the state. We have the most cases in the state, but we have never gotten close to conditions, I don't believe, that presented themselves early on in this virus pandemic in New York or what's going on in parts of Texas and Arizona and Florida. So how would you describe the impact of this virus both at Atrium Health and at Novant? Dr. Smith, I'll start with you.
Good morning. We certainly are seeing the virus. Our intensive care units are about half full currently with COVID-19 patients. But as we have started to open back up the city and elective surgeries, we have the ICUs are also busy with other non-COVID patients as well. I think it's important to recognize that we have capacity to see sick patients, COVID or otherwise.
Dr. Kim.
Yeah, the times are getting more challenging for sure. We have gone into this ebb and flow. Everyone was good when we had social distancing and people had to stay at home. And so we saw the numbers drop, certainly because of businesses and other economic factors, including people just don't like to be away from each other. You know, we are humans. We like interaction. And so when things started opening up, you started seeing more cases. And now we've seen a spike in cases. We are seeing more in the hospital, and now we are busy. We have not only our patients returning who spent time away, who want to be treated, but now we see a spike in COVID cases, Mecklenburg County especially. And so we're busy in our ICUs, in our hospitals, and we're pretty full.
So last week, the state reported that as of Thursday, 75% of North Carolina's inpatient hospital beds and 80% of its intensive care unit beds were full. You just mentioned you have capacity at Novant, Dr. Smith. Is that still true? How do those figures compare to what's going on at Novant right now?
Well, my perspective is truly boots on the ground. And whenever there's a sick patient, we make room. We can move patients to intermediate care rooms and flex units. And we certainly have had to do that in the course of this pandemic. I would agree that our numbers are rising, but I also think it's important to let the public know and just for ourselves that we can take care of these patients. And if you are sick, you should come to the hospital. We certainly want to, we are honored to take care of you, and we will make room should it get tight.
Similar situation at Atrium Health, Dr. Kim?
Yeah, I think it's important to realize that, you know, we've been full even during periods of non-COVID crisis. So just as Dr. Smith said, we manage that. We've already expanded another unit to open up for other sick patients. We've created other step-down units. So when people are recovering from the ICU, but not quite ready to go to the floor, they can go to an intermediate unit. We've also taken measures to open COVID-only positive clinics so that we can make sure and keep everyone safe and not reduce any transmissibility. But the truth is that the hospital system, Atrium, is very well prepared to take on patients. We get referred from all over the state through our network with patients who are sick. And so we're ready. We know how to flex our muscles and flex the hospital so that we can do the best we can with the care.
Last week, along with those state numbers, I believe Atrium reported 20% availability of hospital beds in their system. Is that a normal figure that 20% of the beds are available, or is that a smaller figure than normal because of the influx of COVID-19 patients?
Yeah, I would say we hover around there. Even pre-COVID, we were sometimes in the high 80s percentile as far as occupancy. And that's good for a hospital. I bet it's similar numbers to other places. Right now we're taking due diligence measures in trying to make sure that people who are recovered and don't need quite as much acute care, they can receive that care at home or at nearby clinics. And we have multiple teams that have been deployed to do that.
Although we have a high number of cases in North Carolina and we have the highest number of cases in Mecklenburg County, as I said, we're nowhere near what they are experiencing in Miami or what they're going through in Houston or places like that. Why? What did we do right that they did not do?
I think that especially in the beginning, people were very reverent of the virus and the novelty of it. And so people really did stay at home, and we got that message out pretty quickly, pretty succinctly, and patients stayed at home and tried to protect themselves and each other. I think that those other cities that you're mentioning are slightly larger. They're travel hubs. Particularly now, I'm seeing my patients who have gone on vacations to Florida, to other, you know, places that are hotspots. And so that has something to do with it as well.
As we go through this conversation, I would like any healthcare workers who might be listening to chime in on this about the biggest challenges you are facing in your job during this pandemic and how you're dealing with that mentally and physically and how you're dealing with that at home. When you come home from work, what are you coping? How are you coping with the stress? You can tweet us. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. In other parts of the country, particularly in the beginnings of this pandemic, we heard about short supplies, lack of PPP, I think it's PPP, or PPE, personal protective equipment. We've heard about lack of ventilators being in short supply. Has that been a problem here? Is it now? Could it be in the future, Dr. Kim?
Yeah, I believe that's correct, Mike. We have always tried to keep track of those things, and those have become front and center, especially in this pandemic. Atrium has done a great job in securing PPE, keeping our workers safe, and having enough ventilators. And so we have not had any issue to date where we have run out of either. Now, you always get worried when your supplies are a little low. It's almost like if you've only got a half a bag of potato chips in the cupboard, you want to make it, and you love potato chips, so you ought to make sure you go to the store and get some. But And that has nothing to do with antiviral therapy, just mentioning comfort food, as that helps our mental status as well. But, you know, when you get alerted about things, you tend to follow it more. And certainly there's been a lot more alerts about PPE, a lot more alerts about testing and supplies, ventilators, and we've actually been very good. So we're very happy that there has been enough. As you know, Mr. Woods donated 1 million masks to the state to help folks. And so our supply is good. We're definitely driving more campaigns now to get the word out that people need to social distance and also wear their masks.
The Mr. Woods you refer to is Gene Woods. He's the CEO of Atrium Health. I want to bring him up in the conversation again later because of something he said to the Senate yesterday about testing. But you nodded during Dr. Kim's response, Alexis Smith. Is the same true of Novant? Have you always had enough PPE, enough ventilators, et cetera?
We have. There was a time when we were certainly more concerned about resources than others when our numbers ebb and flow, but certainly we were not at a lack of ventilators. Collaboratively among our hospitals that we have across Matthews, Huntersville, the greater Charlotte market, and also obtaining them ventilators to make sure that we had these resources as things change. We want to make sure that we are getting the message out just, you know, in collaboration with Atrium, that we have these resources as things progress. I certainly think that we're in the time of COVID. We're in it for the long haul, and we're prepared for that to protect our community.
So we are learning something new about this virus almost every day because I watch and listen to a lot of stuff and read a lot of stuff about this. And I want to point out that Dr. Kim has just put his mask on, even though we're all meeting on Zoom. So good for you. We're learning something
and
new
Mike,
about
I
this.
Mike, I want to say something with my mask
masks?
On so that
all
you
right.
can see, right? That
yes.
the viewer can hear that now I'm speaking with a mask. And, you know, you can still hear me okay. And so what I want to make sure that people understand is I see a big thing when they're speaking on the phone or to anyone, they lower their mask because there's a perception they can't hear you.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to point that out.
It doesn't even really muddy the sound. I guess if you're a lip reader, it makes it difficult in some situations because actually when you watch people's faces in a social situation, you are reading cues, and some of those cues go away with the mask, but that's a small price to pay, one assumes. So we're learning something new about this virus every day, Dr. Kim, and it seems to things change every day. One of the things that we've heard from the very beginning is that it seems to be worse for those who suffer comorbidities, other conditions, pre-existing conditions, and among those conditions would be cancer. And that's your area of expertise. At how much greater risk are those people in terms of catching this virus and in terms of their recovery and the prognosis for that recovery once they get the virus?
Yeah, Mike, this is a really big concern. My specialty is actually lung cancers and thoracic cancers. That's what I've been studying for the last 20 years. And when I was at MD Anderson, I specialized in research around that. The cancer patient, everything you hear about precautions to the normal population, meaning those who may have a condition and come to the hospital, when you start considering patients with cancer, you almost have to magnify that by 10. And whether that's, okay, your susceptibility is to get the virus, then I view it as a cancer patient, it's 10 times more susceptible because their immune systems are already low. They're fighting disease. They're on chemotherapy or some sort of immunotherapy. And we're having more and more data that number one, patients with cancer die more frequently due to COVID as opposed to the general population. Two, we're even hearing, you know, anecdotes come out that in fact, certain therapies are very, very much can put them at more risk, like immunotherapies. And so we really worry about them.
Dr. Edward Kim is a cancer specialist, a solid tumor program specialist at Levine Cancer Institute, Atrium Health. He's here with Dr. Lexi Smith from Novant Health and Mary Gail Frawley-O'Day. We'll hear from her when we come back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about COVID-19 and the hospital systems here in Mecklenburg County, where we have the highest number of both hospitalizations and cases in the state. And we're going to be talking in the next few minutes about the mental health impact on those who are caregivers in those hospital settings because of the tsunami of patients that have come in trying to deal with this. We're talking with Dr. Edward Kim, chair of the Solid Tumor Program and Clinical Trials at Levine Cancer Institute Atrium Health, Dr. Lexi Smith, a critical care physician and pulmonologist who works in intensive care units at Novant Health Hospitals. And we're going to bring into the conversation, after one more question, I promise, Mary Gail Frawley O'Day. Dr. O'Day is a licensed psychologist, trauma specialist, and the executive director of Presbyterian Psychological Services. We're hearing these horror stories, and we've witnessed them. If you watch television news, they let camera crews into these hospital settings in the most highly stricken areas of the country. And we're seeing that healthcare workers are saying that they're dealing with people in the hallways, in beds, in conference rooms. And sometimes they walk into the hospital, and by the time they go through intake, they're on a ventilator. That's how quickly this disease can impact you, and it's one patient after the other, and it goes on and on and on and on and on for weeks. Is that what we are experiencing at Novant, Dr. Smith?
I think that what we are experiencing is an adaptability in the hands of our providers and our community. So we certainly have, our practice patterns have changed. I think that in the beginning, we had more patients on ventilators. And so it felt more confined, like more ICU beds were taken with people on life support. And really, as we've learned more about the virus, learned more about the patients, how they react to the virus, we realize that we don't need to intubate as many people and we can treat them differently. And so that sort of frees up that feeling of so many intensive care unit patients. We're learning that we can treat them differently and triage them to different units. So no, for us, it has never been the classic, what you've seen on television, people separated by curtains, mass chaos. It has been certainly organized chaos. And I think that it speaks to the resiliency of my partners and our collaboration with Atrium, that we have learned more about the disease process and how to treat it and who actually needs to be ventilated and what the timing of that.
I'm going to bring the psychologist into this in a second, but you work on the front lines. You are a critical care physician and you work in intensive care units. So have you had difficulty in coming to terms with what you're seeing here? How is this different in your mind and your experience from what you have done every day leading up to COVID-19?
I think that's a really good point and a good question. Certainly, it's a challenge. I have never seen a pandemic. You don't prepare for that in medical school or residency and fellowship. I don't know anyone that does or has. My life will never be the same. My practice patterns won't.
Why and how would they be different going forward?
Well, very specifically, to treat patients without having their families there, to treat patients who are sort of all going through the same thing, but the disease preferentially affects patients differently. So I have a lot of family members that are in the hospital together, and some of them are just mildly affected and some of them are very critically affected. And to try to explain in real time, as you're trying to understand which patients the virus is going to ravage versus the patients that are going to, you know, end up walking out of the hospital without oxygen is a very on point learning, and you have to be adaptable to that. And to be able to explain to patients that this affects you different than your father, different than this, without instilling with them and sort of waylaying a sense of guilt that they've experienced it together is a challenge.
So Dr. Smith has laid the foundation for the next section of this conversation with Dr. Mary Gail Frawley O'Day, who's a licensed psychologist with Presbyterian Psychological Services. Her story is not unlike those that we've heard on television and on radio stories and read in the newspapers about what physicians and nurses and other healthcare workers have experienced with the tsunami of people and the severity of the infection and the speed at which the infection can take a bad turn, and the fact that all these people are suffering, the patients are suffering alone because family members cannot be let in, and that's affecting the mental health of healthcare workers because they're usually empathetic people. That's why they're in the business that they're in. And it hurts to see people die alone. It hurts to see grandma not be able to say goodbye to her grandsons and her sons and daughters, etc. it is having an impact on these workers, and you're a trauma specialist, Dr. O'Day. You worked with firefighters in the aftermath of 9/11. Is what our frontline professionals are experiencing right now with this similar to the kind of trauma that specialists have to either deal with normally in the course of their work in an intensive care unit or after 9/11?
Yeah, I think in some ways it's different than 9/11 in that the healthcare workers are running into the burning building every single day. It's not a one day event. And then of course there were people on the pile and I saw a lot of people, and firefighters and family members who, had, months of symptomatology. Here we're seeing people, healthcare workers with acute stress disorder. They are, as you said, very affected by seeing people dying alone. They have a different story about equipment, having to use N95s for three different shifts, feeling like they're really under the gun every single day, worried if colleagues are getting the disease, people that they're working with, they're worried about bringing it home to their families. And so I think that we will see a mental health pandemic accompanying the medical pandemic, and we'll see it going into the future. It's not going to just be a couple of weeks or a couple of months. We're going to see people who are developing symptoms now and then later. So it will have a pervasive national mental health impact on people.
Can this be compared to PTSD in that sometimes soldiers who are impacted by that don't exhibit the symptoms of it for a while? They may come home and start to have these problems. So, and you saw this in firefighters, I believe, after 9/11, that these symptoms began to exhibit much after the event and then continued for a very long time and perhaps continue today. Is that what you're anticipating?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm anticipating, that what we're seeing now are people who are in acute distress, but there will be a greater number of people who don't even realize that they're experiencing symptoms until they're kind of out of the building. You know, the fire's out and they have time to reflect. Mm-hmm. But we are seeing people now who are having sleep disorders, who are having nightmares about what they're seeing, who have intrusive thoughts of what they're seeing on the units, anxiety, depression, tearfulness. And especially, I think it's important that the people we're seeing are very angry at the members of the public who are not cooperating with recommended guidance. You know, I think that no matter whether you've worn your mask or not, if you get to the hospital, you're going to be treated by professionals with dignity, and they are going to work as hard as they can to get you well and to keep you alive. And it's really frustrating for healthcare workers who even have friends or relatives, or who see people walking around without masks, without social distancing, and putting themselves and therefore their healthcare workers in danger.
In another interview, here's what you said about that. You say that they're very angry and feel healthcare workers feel unsupported by community members who refuse to wear masks and who downplay the seriousness of this virus. You call it rage. That's a word you don't often see when it comes to healthcare workers. Rage over those who don't wear masks. Are you hearing this from local healthcare workers, or is this a national phenomenon where we're in the hot spots?
It's both. That it is both rage and despair. It engenders a sense of hopelessness. Like, this is not going to change unless the public and more members of the public get on board.
I want to come back to masks because I think that's an important thing. And yesterday, the president finally admitted that wearing a mask might be a good thing, kind of hedged his bets. But let's talk a little bit about what healthcare workers should be doing right now. Even if they feel okay, even if they're dealing with this because they're getting through their day and they don't really have time to think about it. They have to go back to work tomorrow, and they come home and they sleep for 8 hours and go back to work, so they don't have time for that. But are there things that should they be working therapy into their life schedules right now?
Well, I would certainly say so. And in addition, I think the if they think about the acronym CSEE, sleep, eating, and exercise, to the extent possible, to have a normal sleep routine with good sleep hygiene, which is very hard for people working, night shifts, as Dr. Smith can probably attest. Eating well, trying not to overeat. People are talking about the COVID 15, like the freshman year 15 pounds, but to try to eat sensibly, to not overeat sweets, salts, not to drink too much, not to use alcohol or drugs as a way to try to calm the nervous system. And exercise, to get out at least 30 minutes a day, get out, even though it's horribly hot right now, but get a little bit of sun and to do some exercise, that helps a lot. And to, yes, get help if you're having nightmares, if you're going to work angry and staying angry all day, if you feel like your family your relationships are suffering. And that's another important part, to keep in touch with loved ones, even if it's virtually. As Dr. Kim said, we're humans and we want to be connected. If we're connecting at least via Zoom or GoToMeeting or whatever, it's better than not connecting at all.
So given the fact that you think that we're going to see an increasing need for mental health care for these frontline workers, particularly in the future, will we have the capacity in the future for the numbers of people we're talking about? And what kind of care, what kind of therapy do you think they will need?
I think for people with acute stress disorder, it's kind of a matter of looking through the symptoms and giving them some tools to use. For people, everyone reacts differently. If people have been traumatized in the past, they're going to perhaps have more serious symptomatology. And so then you have a more kind of typical trauma-informed talk therapy. Presby Psych is a trauma-informed organization, and so we know how to work with people who have been traumatized in various ways. You may have long-term, like for instance, kids that are in college right now who are not having the college experience they hope to have. They may not, they're getting through and they're adapting, but they may find later that they're having grief or, affecting their ability to function later on because they were their college education was disrupted.
Maybe this is not your area of expertise, but I'm just curious about this because we're seeing people who are not going to be able to experience the full-fledged college experience as young adults, where socialization and growing up and finding out who you are and what you're all about is part of that socialization experience. But we're also seeing younger people, younger children, who are missing out on classroom education, where they have peers in the classroom, where they go out on the playground at recess, where they learn how to deal with other human beings of their own age. At what point should we become concerned that this part of growing up is missing in a whole bunch of people?
And what I think we need to do is develop some strategies for that. The National Academy of Pediatricians and yesterday the North Carolina Pediatric Association both recommended getting kids back into school as soon as possible. That's great if it is possible, but it may not be for a while. And I think to be able to develop people who work with kids and adolescents to be able to develop Zoom group programs where they are having group therapy and confronting some of those issues. And it's also not going to last forever. A year is a long time, but it's people live till 80 and 90. A year is, I think people also need to kind of chill out about it. Right. The kids will catch up once they get back to normal.
So let's talk about masks again. Dr. Kim, you put your mask on for a second. I think even the most astute listener could not tell the difference in the audio. You were speaking clearly and distinctly through what appears to be a pretty nice mask. It's a high-density mask. There has been a lot of mixed messaging about masks, shall we say. It has been said, though, that if everybody would wear a mask, and Dr. Fauci has said this, it would quickly reduce the spread of this virus. Do you both agree with it, Dr. Kim?
Yes, absolutely. We have to wear masks. It's something that if anyone's tried to wear a mask for 6 or 8 hours, even longer, it hurts. It is something that is not very comfortable. But for most of the public, it's a quick run to the store or grabbing food. That is not very long. And so, again, I really, really want to urge that. These are not mutually exclusive either, Mike. You have to wear the mask and social distance. It's not you can wear a mask and get close to somebody or take your mask off if you're 6 feet away. It is both. And so they're equally important in that regard.
And Dr. Smith, some people who are refusing to wear masks say it's their right not to wear masks. And perhaps that's coming from a severe libertarian streak in them. Perhaps it's coming from mixed signals from our leaders who at first didn't. And that includes medical people who said at first maybe masks weren't necessary. And now they're saying that they are. Is this refusal to wear masks, and the governor yesterday, Governor Cooper essentially said, if you don't wear a mask, you are hurting other people. You're being inconsiderate, and you're hurting other people. Will that change hearts and minds? Do you think a better understanding that if we all do this, we can go back to normal more quickly, if they internalize that, would that change minds?
I certainly hope so, because I believe that with all of my soul. I think that we need to bear down, be together on this, and recognize that a mask is not necessarily protecting you in any way. It's protecting me. It's courteous. I've seen people, athletics, running outside, doing the same thing, and it sort of warms me and recognizes me as a compatriot here when I see someone who's doing something to protect me. And that's how I really signal it and flag it as someone who's taking time to protect me as they enter public.
Officials have been very reluctant to have mask mandates in one word or less. Should they mandate masks, Dr. Kim?
Yes, and they should also.
Time's up. That's it. Time's up. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the impact on healthcare workers of taking care of people who are suffering from COVID-19 in the hospital. Dr. Lexi Smith is with us. She's a critical care physician and pulmonologist in intensive care units at Novant Health Hospitals. We said earlier that one of the stresses on healthcare workers is that they're watching these people in the hospital die alone. And Alexis has told me off the air that patients do not die alone. They pass away without family, but never alone in a hospital setting because the healthcare workers are there. But that's part of the burden that these healthcare workers are now having to shoulder. Dr. Edward Kim is chair of the Solid Tumor Program and Clinical Trials at Levine Cancer Institute Atrium Health, and Dr. Mary Gail Frawley O'Day is a licensed psychologist and trauma specialist and executive director of Presbyterian Psychological Services. We were talking about masks, Dr. O'Day, just before the break. And people acknowledge now, even the president said yesterday, you should wear a mask when you can't socially distance. Dr. Kim just said the two go together, essentially wear the mask and socially distance. Some retail stores have mandated them in recent weeks, among them Walmart. But yesterday, Lowe's Home Improvement said, quote, it will not allow its workers to enforce the company's new mandate that all shoppers wear masks, citing safety concerns. They said they wouldn't ask their associates to put their safety at risk by confronting customers about wearing masks. That's the job of the police, not the associate at the Lowe's, I'm sure. But when you hear that and you know hospital workers who are shouldering this burden of this influx of cases of hopelessly ill patients, what do you think, Dr. O'Day?
You know, I think that emphasizing what Alexis and Dr. Kim have talked about, that, you know, we stop at stop signs. We stop at stop signs to protect other people, to protect ourselves and other people. I'm sure there was a time in the country where you didn't have to have stop signs because there wasn't enough traffic, but now we do. This is no different. It's having empathy for your fellow human beings and preventing catastrophic accidents by wearing a mask. And I think that's the more stores, the more outlets that have the you don't get in, no mask, no entrance. I mean, restaurants have no shirt, no entrance, no shoes, no entrance, no jackets, no entrance. This is no different. No mask, no entrance. The more pervasive that becomes, the less likely it is that you're going to have people pulling a gun on a Lowe's worker or starting a fight in the middle of Walmart over it. It becomes more institutionalized.
Well, again, this may not be in your area of expertise, but you are a psychologist. So explain to me, we used to be in it together in this country. It used to be a communal experience. We used to feel that as Americans, although we may have been Republicans or Democrats, conservative or liberal, that this was the greatest country in the world and that we were all rowing the boat together. That seems to have disappeared, and there seems to be going along with this an extreme lack of empathy. One reason Republicans can't talk to Democrats and vice versa is because they hate each other, and they have no empathy whatsoever for each other and their causes. Why? And what can we do psychologically to deal with that and change it?
And that's a really good question. And I the mask issue has become so politicized that I think public service announcements, if you go to a physician, the physician practices should be emphasizing that this is the barn raising of 2020, right? We used to have barn raisers. If somebody's house barn burned down, or the whole neighborhood got together and re-raised the barn. This is the same thing. It's taking care of each other in order to protect our families, our healthcare workers, our first responders. And it has to be a message that's coming from every part of our community. But I think until the political scene changes and things are not so, we call it splitting in our business, that people, it's all bad or all good, all up or all down, instead of being able to hold different viewpoints and have empathy for everyone who's having a different opinion.
I don't want to spend much more time on. Oh, go ahead, Dr. Smith. Go ahead.
I want to disagree a little bit. I see hope. I see compassion, unwavering compassion. I see creativity and ingenuity. And I see the medical community has become so adaptive to virtual visits, video visits. Mm-hmm. So we've taken a way where we couldn't see our patients to now being face to face with them and making it a meaningful visit and ingenuity and creativity. And I really think that we are still a community that's together. You know, my partners will often, you know, when we're leaving shifts, how are you? We walk out together in little ways where we are connected. You know, before, you know, I'm a millennial by birth, my age. And certainly we are a social media breed. And that's such a disconnected way to, you know, interact. But now Zoom and FaceTime and when you can't actually see someone, those are meaningful visits. And I see hope and creativity.
Go ahead, Dr. O'Day.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point, because as professionals, we see different parts of the elephant, right? So Dr. Smith is seeing the incredible dedication of the medical field and feeling that empathy. I'm seeing people who are not feeling that empathy, not feeling cared for, sometimes even by their hospitals and by their workplace. So that's why something like this program is so important, because we need to be aware that we have our hand on one part of the elephant and other people have their hands on different parts of the elephant. And it's all the elephant, it's all real. We need to have an integrated view.
Dr. Kim.
Yeah, I agree. this is unlike anything we've ever been through. And I'm older than Dr. Smith, and so remembered when HIV and AIDS was a big problem. And I even went through classmates who did not even want to refuse to treat HIV patients. And that was very interesting to hear out of medical students. I think one thing that's great about the healthcare industry and the workers is that we run to crises. When there's a crisis, we don't run away, we run to it. And so that this is one of those fights, just as mentioned earlier, it's not 9/11. This is going to last for some time. And so I tell my workers, you know, hey, we got to keep you safe as well. We have a responsibility, and being a leader at Atrium, we want to keep our staff safe, because we can't help the public if they don't stay safe. And then equally, we want to keep our patients safe, and especially in the oncology area where they're very susceptible. They don't want to come, but they need to come because they're getting therapies that are extending their lives, and so they can live a normal life. I take the positives. They're all parts of the elephant. I take the positives. When we have students producing face shields out of their 3D printers from their high schools, that is awesome. When we see patients who are saying, hey, I did this on my 3D printer, will this work? Will it help you wear your mask better? That's awesome. You take all those little wins and they add up, and that's what keeps us inspired to keep helping people and wanting to deliver that care.
Speaking of, I don't want to spend much more time on masks, but speaking of masks and wearing them correctly, I know, Dr. Kim, you wanted to say something about how you should wear a mask, because you see people wearing them in all kinds of different ways, many times below their nose, or they'll take it off to speak and put it back on, which defeats the purpose of the mask. So tell me, what should people be doing? How should they wear them?
Yeah, it should cover your nose. It should cover your mouth. There should be a good covered tight seal along the sides. It shouldn't be hanging off like an oversized bandana. I get a little frustrated just because I see people wanting to do the right thing. They've got the mask on, but it's underneath their nose. It's underneath their chin. Look, if you have to take a drink of something or you know, something like that, great. But not talking on the phone, not talking to people, yes. It's ironic. Sometimes if you have a low voice, then you have to speak closer to someone or louder. I'd say in the COVID time, let's just speak loud so that you can stay 6 feet away and keep your mask on. Loud is okay. And I think it'll allow people to come out of their shells and relieve a little stress to speak louder. People will know it's not because you're angry. I mean, maybe we could promote that today, Mike.
Jess on Twitter identifies himself as a healthcare worker, and they say the hardest thing is the fear that we will be the vector that brings this virus home to our family. We have enough PPE, but we are reusing masks that we were taught for years should be single use. There's a lingering fear of infection in every interaction and on every doorknob. Dr. Smith, talk about that. Talk about that and talk about surfaces.
Surfaces.
Yeah.
Inanimate objects.
Is this virus
phones.
Lingering on surfaces?
It's predominantly airborne. And so it's in the air released during a cough. It's a heavier particle, but certainly we recognize that it can be left on a doorknob, on a telephone, on a kitchen table, things like that. And so that's why we want to practice hand washing, social distancing when you can, and wear a mask. I have seen people take down their mask to sneeze. 100% the wrong thing to do, but certainly it's out there, and so I think that education is important. As far as healthcare workers and being the fear of being the vector, I think that's always going to be something that we see. You know, there's other nosocomial or hospital acquired infections that we are afraid to take home. I keep my shoes outside and don't bring them inside, and that was well before COVID. But we are safe. We've been doing this for 3 to 4 months, and the predominance of hospital employees and workers who are sick or who have been sick is relatively low. We have access to PPE. It is working. I agree that we've had to have some paradigm shifts about reusing masks and cleaning them in certain ways, but predominantly it is working. It has worked. There are certainly, my partners and I had discussed, should we look at getting an RV so that we don't go home to our families. And that was a tough pill to swallow. In general, we have not had to do that and immediately come home, change in the garage, go shower, and then I can greet my family and share dinner with them. But, you know, those extra steps, again, those are extra to take every day to show my family and show the community that we support them and we want to keep them safe.
Testing. Let's talk about testing before we run out of time. There are those who say we're not doing enough and that it takes too long for the tests to come back, which makes tracing, contact tracing, nearly impossible or mostly worthless. Yesterday, Gene Woods, who's the CEO of Atrium, testified before a U.S. Senate panel in which he said that Atrium Health is processing coronavirus tests at about 20-25% of its capacity because of a national shortage of the chemicals, the reagents needed to run these tests. And he said that Atrium can handle 4,000 coronavirus tests per day with its in-house lab, but they are processing far less than that because of that shortage. We could probably do, he said, four times the amount of tests and have close to the same day turnaround. What's the problem here, Dr. Kim? Why we've been having this conversation about tests for months now and nothing changes?
Yeah, it's difficult because this is a pandemic. And generally, when you have crises across parts of the country, whether it's forest fires in California or flooding from a hurricane in Miami or the southern United States, you can rally other systems to come help. There's always help. The problem here is that there's very few places to turn for help. There isn't another sister hospital system that can give you reagents or donate those things. And so unlike local pandemic, local tragedies that occur, this is a national one. And so everybody needs everything right now. And I think we really haven't been faced with anything like that. And that's why we continue to see shortages.
And that takes us to this. We still, even as of yesterday, when the president resumed his COVID-19 reports from the White House, we still have no indication that there ever has been or that there ever will be a national strategy. This idea of putting it off on the backs of governors and county municipalities where people cross lines, invisible lines every day, seems to me to be insane. I'm not a medical professional, but it seems to be ludicrous that you would expect that you would need a national strategy to do this. Do you agree with that? If we're ever going to kick this thing, we all have to be on the same page at the same time for the same amount of time. Who wants to take that?
Yeah, I think we do have to be on the same page. Republicans, Democrats, any party affiliations you have, people who don't have affiliations. And I don't ascribe it to one person. In this country, one person is not the all-powerful being. We have multiple high-level folks who can work together to get something together, to get a national strategy.
So when you're talking about the burdens that these healthcare workers face and the mental health of these healthcare workers, and you've already said that they have rage, Dr. O'Day, about people not wearing masks, what about how is this impacting their mental health as they think about no national strategy? We're out here flapping in the wind by ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, the people that we've seen or have said that, and it's part of not feeling cared for by the national government and by the people that should be developing strategies to take care of Americans. And even some, I have had three patients report going to physicians, three different specialties, who had their masks under their chin. So if the doctors are not modeling, we all have to model the social distancing and the mask wearing that is recommended until and unless we get a national strategy that does for the whole nation what New York did with their shutdown.
And you get the last word. Dr. Mary Gail Frawley O'Day, licensed psychologist with Presbyterian Psychological Services. Dr. Edward Kim, chair of the Solid Tumor Program and Clinical Trials at Levine Cancer Institute, Atrium Health. And Dr. Lexi Smith, critical care physician, pulmonologist, and intensive care at Novant Health Hospitals. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.